Are you struggling to advance your career and sacrificing time with your loved ones because of endless to-dos, low energy, and just not enough time in the day? If so, then this podcast is for you. I am your host, Dr. Ann Sung, an ER critical care and space doctor, a peak performance coach, real estate investor, and a mother of a toddler. I'm here to guide you on mastering your mind and give you the essential skills to achieve peak performance. So welcome to Productivity MD, where you can learn to master your time and achieve the five freedoms in life. Hello, welcome to Productivity MD podcast. Over here, I have Dr. Kate Mangona. She's a pediatric radiologist. She is also a marriage coach, and she is the host of Medicine, Marriage, and Money podcast, YouTube channel, and host of Couples Retreats. And the reason why I wanted to bring Kate on is because, you know, without a stable relationship, a stable marriage, or, you know, when somebody starts being productive at their work and they kind of let go of their productivity in their close relationships and the loving relationships, then, you know, you're really suffering, you're not fulfilled, and you're not balanced in all aspects of life. So that's why I wanted to bring Kate on here and kind of talk about how to essentially have both awesome entrepreneurial journey, career, and an awesome, stable marriage at the same time. So, Kate, thank you so much for coming on the show. Would you give us like a brief introduction about what you do? We did a very, very small one, but can you expand on a little bit more? And why do you do what you do?
Absolutely. So I feel like I have the perfect work-life balance. I work 3 days a week in the hospital reading x-rays on little babies and children. And then I work 2 days on my podcast, my coaching programs, my marriage retreats, and just talking with other people who love personal growth and contribution, going to events and retreats. And also in the evening time on weekends, being a mom to 3 little girls and a poodle, and then a wife to another physician who works a lot. So I just feel like I have found this balance over several years. I did not have this before COVID, and I tweaked things along the way, but oh my gosh, being productive and time management is so important. And I never knew how much mothers had to know about time management until I started having babies, and then things started falling through the cracks.
Wow. So I wonder, like, why is this important for people that you've seen, you know, from your clients and the physicians you coach? Like, why does it actually matter to have a stable relationship with your husband? Because a lot of us, like you said, when you become moms, you're focused on your kids and you're trying to manage your kids with your work. But why is it so important to have a good relationship with your husband too, or, you know, significant other in general?
Yeah. Well, when you're not focusing, like when you're not building something, we're not working on maintaining something or making something better, it's often getting worse. I mean, usually things don't just maintain. If you think about like your kitchen or your bedroom, if you're not making your bed, it's getting messier. Your dishes don't get done. Your laundry doesn't get done by itself. Same thing with your relationship. If you're not working on it, you guys tend to be growing apart or to having these thoughts and feelings that might not be helpful. So if you're not assessing, okay, what are the stories I'm telling myself about my spouse, even when we're not around? And then when we come together, those could be harming your relationship. When you are putting yourself in friend groups, like you and I put ourselves in front of, where we are actively working on not only our careers, but also our personal lives, like this propels you forward. Then you are able to spend more time in gratitude, right? Like waking up at 5 a.m. and thinking about how grateful you are for those moments you had with your spouse yesterday or your kids yesterday. When you're not doing that, your mind goes into these negative spirals. And that's just natural. That's from centuries ago when we were cave women and cavemen and we had to survive. And so it's really not our fault. It's our biology, but we have to keep up with that and kind of use the peripheral cortex of our brain to see like, okay, the amygdala hijack that happens, we have to dim that down a little or just understand where the anger is coming from, where the frustration, where the resentment, because we can deny it all we want. We might say, oh, I never get angry. and you don't even realize you are. Or you might deny that sadness or that fear and just keep pushing forward. And something I find a lot of my clients do is they're good at what they do. Like they're high achieving professional physicians, and they're really good at either whatever it is, reading x-rays, diagnosing patients. And so they crave that dopamine hit. When they go into work, they're always getting those hits. And so they just keep doing it. It doesn't matter if they stay later or if they read extra x-rays on the weekends. But when they come home, then they feel like more of a failure or more fear, like, I'm going to get in trouble. You know, I don't even want to come home because I'm not going to have pulled in the garage the right way, or I'm not going to greet my spouse the right way, you know? And so you start to seek your pleasure of your work and then away from the pain that your relationship is kind of going towards because you're not actively working on it. And then you just become the anger and the resentment spills into your professional life. Then you show up at work angrier. Your patients don't get you at your peak performance. And then your kids see what you're modeling of how to handle conflict in the home. They don't see you at work unless you work from home, but they see how you interact with your spouse and them. And that's their normal.
Yeah, I think that's probably my biggest why too, to hold my tongue sometimes and like just think like, I got to be a good model for my baby. I got to just pause 10 seconds. And then there's no need to talk about what hasn't been done.
So I know.
That's really my strongest why. And you're right. Like if this is so important, because if you don't have a stable relationship with your significant other, if you have kids, that they feel that instability, they can sense, you know, negative nonverbal communication. And in turn, it definitely affects them. And you want them to be able to grow up when they meet a significant other to know what is actually a healthy, functional way of communicating different thoughts or having open communication, I guess, of different opinions versus like just conflict. And, you know, it's always me, me, me. So you have mentioned a little bit, but I want to expand on a little bit more what it's like to have, or maybe are there stages? Like, are there stages from like resentment, or first you're ignoring and resentment, or like stonewalling? I know there's like different stages versus what it could be like if you actually have respect, intimacy, compassion, playfulness in the relationship. Just trying to contrast, like, so that people know where they're at, essentially, can diagnose themselves.
Oh, absolutely. So, and you know, I studied Gottman. Gottman has the four horsemen, which you were kind of referring to, the stonewalling, the contempt, the criticism, and the defensiveness. And I wouldn't necessarily call those stages, but those are like personality types that we fall into when we get into conflict. Like, do you consider yourself more critical of your spouse? Do you get more defensive when they make a comment? Are you thinking of yourself as superior? That's what contempt means. Like, you're always like, you know, well, you shouldn't have done that. I would have done it this way. Everybody knows that. Or you just shut down. Right. You just shut down and there's all this internal dialogue going on in your own head, like, God, you know, when is this going to end? She can't keep going on like this, you know, but on the outside, it's just a blank stare. And then, you know, Gottman teaches the antidotes to that. And I'll just, you know, give you an example. So like the antidote to criticism is, instead of being critical about how he put the dishes in the wrong order in the dishwasher, like the plasticware, he didn't put it on the top, he put it on the bottom, or close them to whatever, put them away in the wrong area. Just be grateful that he did it. I don't want to say just. Just is actually one of those words I don't like. It takes energy away from the conversation. Can you find gratitude that he or she wanted to help out with the dishes, that they were actually put away? Now you can put dirty dishes in there. When you're referring to stages, I just want to go back to that, because this is a common pattern I see in some of my clients is at first, they'll be hurt. Okay. So there's like this hurt inside of them. It's kind of like this hurt sadness, but then it turns into anger pretty quickly. And so then they react with anger because their heart is so closed. They don't want to be open and vulnerable. They don't want to be hurt. So it turns into anger. Now, after you're angry for so long, so first it's like hurt sadness, then it's second, it's anger. Third, you get into this numb phase. where you're so angry all the time, you become addicted to it almost, that you've turned numb to whatever that external stimulus is, or your spouse. Say your spouse is always traveling on business. And at first it really was, you got very sad and it was very hurtful. Then you just became angry because you feel like you're the one who has to do all the housework or the kid work. And then eventually the third thing it turns into is just this numb, like where you're like, okay, well, in order to protect my heart and to also to not have to feel angry all the time, I'm just going to not care about it anymore. I'm just going to feel numb. I'm not going to have any feelings about it at all. And so that stage is so dangerous because that's when you don't even care. Like you're not going to even attempt to start to rebuild the relationship. You're not going to even attempt to try to understand your spouse, and you lose all compassion, all playfulness, all curiosity. So you've become numb, and then you start to develop this life where it's like independent, loveless relationship where everything is eroding and then you don't even know each other anymore.
That sounds so sad. How common is that?
So I feel like I see it so common. I mean, when you think of divorces, right? 50% of all marriages end up in divorce. Now we know there's a Harvard study several years ago that's shown that with professional couples, so physician, dentist couples, that number goes down to 25%. So, and I would say, and probably 25% of those marriages, something deteriorated. They became numb. They stopped caring. They let things like finances, in-laws, differences in parenting techniques, intimacy, wants and desires, they let things like that get in between them and their spouse. First it was hurt, then it was anger, then it became numb, then you didn't care. Then you start just finding your own path. And there's a place for personal growth, but also growing together at the same time, kind of like parallel, and maybe not on the same rung of the ladder, but in parallel. And so maybe we could just say 25%. And I'm just saying that based on that separate, I'm extrapolating here. So I don't have the numbers for you, Anne, but I see it more frequently than not. Gottman actually has the numbers that couples don't reach out for help until they've been in this state for 7 years.
Wow, that's a long time to be growing apart from each other. I think I can get what you're saying. There's a difference between, you know, you let them go and explore on their own, but fully supporting them versus you let them go and it doesn't matter what they're doing. You're just going to do your own thing. That's what it sounds like, right? Yeah. It's so funny about the hurt and anger. It just happened like this morning. This morning I was, my husband was trying to tell me something. So I like interrupted him to ask him a question, which thinking back, you know, I probably could have just let him finish talking, but I interrupted him as he was talking, was like, do you want me to put avocados in the babies? I was trying to put avocados, like trying to prep the daycare meals for you. And he was like, you interrupted me. I was like, well, I'm just trying to help you. It turned into anger like really fast. And I just like, okay, you do it.
I know. Isn't that funny? It's like, we're all just trying to help each other, but we interpret the other person's actions as some kind of like attempt to be mean. And it's our primitive brain. We have to like constantly be aware of this, remind ourselves to take that breath and be like, okay, what are their best intentions here? You know, or whatever kind of mantra you need to tell yourself, like benefit of the doubt.
And for me, it would have been like, yeah, probably shouldn't have interrupted him. It's fine. Yeah. I could just do it without asking him if he wanted help, right? So I think they just reminded me of that. And what would it be like when somebody does, like the successful marriages you see, the couples, what exactly are they like? Is it even achievable?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's constant progress. Both, I don't believe in compromise. And I got this from one of my marriage intimacy coach expert mentors, Alexandra Stockwell. She has this book called Uncompromising Intimacy. And so I don't believe in compromise when it comes to intimate relationships. And I actually don't really believe in boundaries either. I feel like if you have put up boundaries may be good at the very beginning or for like your professional life, people who don't really come onto your inner circle. But when you think about your most intimate partner, they are in your inner circle. If you've put them on one of your outer circles where you put that coworker you don't want to talk to necessarily every single day, or maybe your mother-in-law or father-in-law who just rubs you the wrong way every single time you talk to them, then that relationship is not going to be that intimate. You know, when they are there, there's really no need for compromise or boundaries. It's all about understanding. And you may have problems. Like, we all have issues and problems and conflicts, and not all of them have to be resolved. We just have to understand that each other, we each have feelings. Now, some of our partners may not be forthcoming with those, especially if those weren't routine in their home growing up. And they may not be interested in sharing their feelings. So we have to be that like feeling detective, that sense like, okay, I sense this, or this is what I want. This is what I tell a lot of my clients. Okay, so they're like, I really wish I was more loved. I was more appreciated. I was more valued. And this is what I say, well, if you want that, then what you need to do is you need to love. You need to appreciate. It's kind of like karma. What you put into it, you're going to get back. If you put anger and criticism and resentment into your relationship, that's what you're going to get back. Or you're going to get some form of emotion that you just, it makes you feel icky. But if you're pouring love into a relationship, that person's going to notice. I mean, if you're not in an abusive situation, that person is going to notice and they're going to reciprocate that love. Like, it doesn't take much. I had a client message me the other day. She had responded to an angry text message from her spouse with understanding and compassion. And this is a new thing for her because this is a new thing I've been talking about this past month. So she took my advice. He responded how he was so angry about at this family member of his. And he used some colorful words that I don't need to repeat. And instead of her mothering him or coaching him and saying, you know, that's not helpful, don't think that way, you know, they're really not that bad. Instead, she responded with understanding, wow, you know, like that must feel terrible. And I'm so sorry. I can't remember exactly what she said, but then she put in like, I wonder how their mom deals with them. Or, you know, she put in like, I am so sorry you're that way. Like, you can always talk to me. And they were apart at the time. And his next response was, you know what? I shouldn't have said such harsh words, but yeah, it's hard. And it was just his response went from angry to like calm. I could just reading the text, I could just sense it was, he felt understood. He felt seen and that love, whereas it could have gone the completely different way, right? If she would have started mothering him, that could have been an explosion.
Yeah. When you say mothering, basically trying to solve the problem too, right? Like,
solve your problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Reminding you to go to bring your jacket when it's too cold outside, when you do it every single morning and you don't need to be reminded. Reminding you like all, like some people just need to learn on their own some of these things. And you like, you didn't marry your mom for a reason. You know, people say you do kind of marry somebody that resembles your mother or your father because you're used to that type of mentality and like those actions around you and you feel safe. But when you marry somebody who's constantly telling you what to do and not appreciating, like, it's like the gap in the game, like telling you about the gap, all of your gaps and not telling you how wonderful you are and how appreciative you are. It's like, we do it to our own selves, Anne. And this is why you and I love this kind of stuff, because we tend to naturally be very hard on ourselves. And that's what's got us to this place. We beat ourselves up. We probably are recovering perfectionists and people pleasers. And so we have these expectations for everybody else in our lives. That's why we tend to be martyrs and like kill ourselves staying to the work. Everybody else has gone home. Well, I have to do all the work because they didn't know how to do it right. And then you expect your spouse to do the same thing because that's what you expect of yourself, instead of knowing, you know what? My spouse has got it right. I need to learn from them.
Yeah, it's so true. This was just recently at UPW, Unleash Your Power Within. Like 3 weeks ago, I told myself I would appreciate, like, instead of saying what wasn't done, I would say what was done. Three things that were done by that individual. And this really applies not just your significant other, your kids, like everybody else in your life, your employee, your employer, whatever, your assistant, people who did the Instacart deliveries.
Yes.
Just wanting to be in a more grateful state. And I will say that instead of, it did like, I noticed the shift when I made that commitment. I noticed the shift and I opened the fridge and I was like, you know, noticing, wow, this was done, this was done, this was done. And then after that, I was like, oh, wow, that was a first. So you can train your mind to notice the gain instead of the gap. I'm still training my mind, of course, with my own spouse. And I think I'm getting better. But I know just last week, we had a discussion on, we have Culinary Leader Week. So one person manages all the food. And I think I was like, well, for the past 3 weeks, I've already been dealing with the food and, you know, not really commenting on, you know, all of the smart techs that like he installed in the home and all the help that he gave, you know, to help our toddler, et cetera. So yeah.
Does he want to be culinary? What do you call it? Culinary leader? Does he want to be a culinary leader?
Well, we decided at that time we were going to alternate weeks to kind of split the burden. So it was decided. And then, so what the term though is, you know, our house manager cooks and preps everything. So we don't actually cook. And we also recently hired a chef who's coming tomorrow. So you're just managed, and our assistant adds the groceries. So you're just managing people who cook.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's it.
I just encourage, like, you know, things like happen, like I'm supposed to be in charge of paying the credit card bills every month. And he's in charge of the taxes every year, even though I try to sit with him and try and do some of the taxes too. And he's the big financial pictures are big investments. So I always encourage people to reevaluate that once a month, every 2 months. Like if it's not working, maybe that's just not their strength. And you know, you can play on, we all have strengths and weaknesses, right? So just play up each other's strengths and not so much downplay the weaknesses.
Yeah. Yeah. And what I read also in 80-80 marriage is that, you know, whoever has a higher standard should really just do it because the other person is not going to do it as well as you or up to your happiness level, I guess.
And positive reinforcement. We all know, like in 2023, that positive reinforcement works. It works in our dogs. It works on our children. And guess what? It works on our spouses too. So the criticism we have, the negatives, like, and even when you think of like our medical school training, there was so much critique. It was like, oh, that made us grow stronger. That made us like who the physician we are today. I don't know if we necessarily want to bring that home. I am a much better wife and friend and gravitate towards those people in my life who are positive reinforcement and maybe tell me like critiques in a certain way, but not all the time hammering them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like the feedback sandwich, I guess.
Yeah.
Yes. A little bit of that. And then I'm curious then once these people start having these issues of there's like, you know, these mild things where it's just like, you know, your ego and defense mechanism comes up. So what would you say would be like the first antidote or action or mindset to that versus once you get to the stonewalling or the last stage where you just don't care anymore? What are some top like three steps that you would take for that stage?
Yeah. Okay. So, before you get to the numb, when you're at the angry stage, I feel like that's when you have to decide. Number one, you have to decide that you're going to take full responsibility of your own emotions. I like to say that some people treat their spouse like an emotional vending machine. Like I'm angry because he did that. And I just want to push like happier. I want to push calm and like, I want it to come out, but you're in charge of your own anger, sadness. They did not create it. So you have to decide first that you're in charge of that anger or that resentment. And then you have to figure out an experiment. Okay. What do I need to do to get out of that anger? Am I not taking care of myself? Am I not eating the foods I need want to be eating? Am I not going for walks or moving my body the way I want to? Do I feel so overwhelmed because I need to, like you do, outsource the cooking? Am I saying I'm doing all the household work, whereas I could outsource some of that? And of course, it needs to be managed. But do I want to do that? You know, so deciding, taking those actions. And then thirdly, just accepting that you have married this person because you love them. So reminding yourself of those, like why you fell in love. Is that why you're still in love? What do you want your life story? Like, you know what your love story looks like? What do you want your life story to look like with this person? And can you vision that? And are you in the right frame of mind? Maybe you're not. So maybe you have to stay on step one where you're taking back control of your own emotions. And then step number two, where you're figuring out, okay, do I need to listen to a podcast today, read a book today, talk to a friend who's in a better stage than I am, right? Because we're not reinventing the wheel here. And there are so many resources out there. Am I hanging out with the wrong friend group that all we do is talk negatively about our spouses and everybody's getting divorces, which in some cases, okay, they're going to be happier, but you have to decide whether you're going to be happier divorced or in the relationship. And is that what you want? You know, and then you take those actions. And then third, okay, when you're in that spot to then start loving, to start showering them with love, to start showing them all the different languages that you could love them and just doing it.
So the beginning stage is deciding that you will not victimize yourself, that you can't control how you feel and you're not blamed. Well, the reason why I reacted to this or I feel like this is because he did this, right? Or she did this. And then essentially just figuring out their love language and take control. Whatever you want, you give first. That's what it sounds like, right?
And so the second stage is really just experimenting to figure out what void, because any negative emotion we have, or if we call it a negative emotion, I mean, all emotions we have, but any emotion you don't want, like anger, resentment, jealousy, frustration, the second stage would then figure out what unmet need is causing that feeling. Because all those feelings are all caused by an unmet need that you can fulfill or figure out how to fulfill it. You don't have to wait for your spouse to fulfill it. So that's kind of the investigating, the digging deeper part after you've decided. And the third part is you are so far in your personal growth stage, you're realizing all the reasons where these emotions are coming from, that you're able to elevate yourself into a state where then you're able to give the love, the appreciation that you want, but you found on your own. So once you give it, and then it reciprocates back.
I see. So the middle stage is actually realizing you can meet your own need, that there's something that's unmet. Fill your cup up first. And then the third stage is then you don't need to depend on your spouse meeting any needs because you're two independent circles, essentially, not, you know, the Venn diagram circles. So, okay. So then that's like the beginning stage where you guys are not ignoring each other and you actually want to work on your marriage. And what about when you get to the stage where you are ignoring each other and growing separately?
When you're growing separately and ignoring each other, that's, I feel like if you have figured it out, like at that point, I think it's time to go to a retreat, go take a course, like actually hire a coach, like have somebody guide you back into it. Unless you can just turn on a podcast or read a book and then start doing it yourself. But if you're that far into the game, what I've found for my clients who are there, they need a lot of coach, like nudges. Like, hey, they know they want more intimacy, or they know they want more playfulness, they want more love, but they are just like not prioritizing it because they don't know how. They spent their whole life prioritizing their career or thinking that they're, you know, their kids. And I know that's controversial too. You know, prioritizing your kids over your spouse, I feel like can be detrimental for your marriage. And I've gotten some hate on that one actually. And so that is where it's time to hire a marriage coach or go on a marriage retreat.
And out of all the actions they can take, I wonder, have you found anything that's effective? Like, okay, like regular date nights, or is it just scheduling intimacy time? Or I don't know, maybe more of like, you can do your own couples retreat too, like privately going through a list of questions. What is like the 80-20 of some of the actions that can bring back, you know, novelty, playfulness, compassion, and things like that, that people can do regularly, I guess?
Right. So I think absolutely, like when you said scheduling date nights. So if you are so numb, you don't even care anymore, the problem is you're not spending time with them anymore. So you've just got to prioritize them. Like prioritize means one thing, like your career is probably good. It's probably not, you know, going to go anywhere if you prioritize your spouse for this month or even this year. Make 2024 the year you prioritize your spouse. You schedule a date night once a week, whether it's a night or a morning or an evening, you can fit it in. I know we all have busy lives, but if you're too busy, then you might as well get the divorce papers ready, right? Or just agree to live separately or whatever it is you want to do. So you have to put them in your calendar. Now, putting them in their calendar is the step one. you still have to do that work where you're able to take that pause, take responsibility for your own emotions, not victimize yourself, not villainize them. Look and see if you're letting anything else get in between you and them, right? Is it finances? Is it their shopping habits? Are you letting anything else wedge that itself in between you and your spouse? And I like, so me personally, let me just tell an example. 3 or 4 years ago, I noticed that whenever I had a problem, I would always reach out to friends and family who would always take my side. And while it felt very comforting and it like the venting felt great, and they'd be like, okay, you're right. Like it wasn't helpful for the marriage. And so I had to learn to tell certain friends or family, no, like I'm not telling this to you so that you can agree with me. Like I need to figure out what my blind spots are. And then I figured out, okay, maybe I'm venting in the wrong sort of way. And then I started realizing maybe talking about this over and over again is not helpful. Let's see how I can learn from this on my own. What I always recommend to people when they're so in this phase, okay, in this numb phase, is to write down a story of their life, like write a letter to themselves, you know, 10 years from now. This is my life. And this is how, what he says and what he does. And this is how I feel. And this is how my life is. And then at the top, after you finish writing it, like give yourself 30 minutes, at the top, write, my shitty story is. I forget who told me about this. I forget if it was like a Brené Brown or an Elizabeth Gilbert exercise, like one of those two, or was it Martha Beck, one of them. And then my shitty story is, and then you give yourself permission to not believe any of it, any of it. And then you go by line, and you look at every single statement you made, fiction, fiction, fiction. If there's any facts in there, like the sky is blue, or I'm 37 and he's 42, you know, okay, you can keep that as a fact. But if it can't be proven in the court of law, then it's fiction. And you need to decide how you're going to rewrite the next chapter of your life.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm going to do that tomorrow. I don't know if I've done that. I mean, I've done like, you know, a date with destiny, talking about your away values, tour values. This must happen for me to feel successful. You know, those are all BSs, really. So this sounds very similar to that. You write your own BS story and then change it and then just decide.
Change it right away. But you just allow yourself to be like, maybe this isn't true. Maybe this isn't true. You know, yeah, and then you see you're painting monsters in your head that don't really need to be there.
Yeah, I think the example that commonly comes to mind, there's always one person more productive, like more eager, more productive, more faster in action, more decisive. And then the other person is a little more risk averse, more analytical, more rational, slower, and or analysis by paralysis and doesn't take action, right? Or fear, like more fearful. So that clashes a lot. And then as an example, sometimes it makes me feel like unloved or unheard or unsupported, because if I am doing all this fast, you know, this is just the household items or whatever, like joint items. And then when the other side isn't being done so quickly, then it makes me feel unheard and unsupported. But yeah, UPW, I was like, this is all like BS, this really, you know, the intentions are good. You know that they do their best to their abilities. It is good to analyze, to be a little bit risk averse as well. And that you fell in love with them. And, you know, back in the beginning, at least this is my story, that, you know, it was unconditional love in the beginning, that they didn't have to do anything, just like your child. Really, everybody is like a toddler and a child. Like no one has to do anything to deserve your care or unconditional love, really. Because we're all just human beings. So that's what it boiled down to. I had to change the story, but it always comes back every now and then.
Yes. And then you remind yourself, and then you go on another, you read another book, it's another podcast, go on a retreat, and you're like, oh my gosh, this feels so much better.
Thank God for UPW. So, and then I guess speaking about like retreats and resources and books, I wonder what would you recommend for our readers as a starting point? Like, you know, of course, give your podcast and your websites, of course, and then anything else that you would recommend.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Medicine, Marriage, and Money podcast and YouTube channel, I think I have like 140 episodes all with marriage tips and advice that, of course, I've gotten from resources like the Gottman, and his book is one of his books is the 7 Pillars for Making Marriage Work, which is amazing. I totally recommend everybody to read that book. At the end of every chapter, there's like all these exercises that you can do with your spouse. He has a whole host of exercises on his website and courses, classes, retreats you can take. I definitely favor coaching. His is more of a psychoeducational approach. And I think it works very, very well when you package that with coaching too. And I recommend like I said before, the Intimate Marriage podcast or Uncompromising Intimacy book by Alexandra Stockwell, one of my amazing friends and actually co-host to our marriage retreat we're holding in October. And let's see, there's also some great books. Alison Armstrong, she has an amazing website and book called Keys to the Kingdom. And I recommend anybody read it when they cannot understand. Have you read it, Anne?
No, I started Uncompromising Intimacy today.
Keys to the Kingdom is great for when you're not understanding the masculine person in the relationship, and you're not spending your man. And it explains the phases in the men's life. And it's like, sometimes men can be in one phase of their life for 10 years. And we're like, we want to shake them. And we're like, well, I went through all 10 phases like today. How could they be in it for 10 years? But it's like, we have to learn to be patient and compassionate and playful throughout this phase. And it's like, there's no wait. Like, you don't wait out 10 years. So then you know, but there's ways to grow together through that and live through that. So that's why I love that book.
That's awesome. And then what about your website then? What would your website be? Because
So my website, medicinemarriageandmoney.com, same as my YouTube channel, my podcast, Medicine, Marriage, and Money. And then my book will be coming out next year. So we'll talk about that next year.
And then can you tell us a little bit about the retreat up and coming?
Yeah. So Alexandra Stockwell and I are hosting a couples retreat in Maui at the Four Seasons in October 7th through 11th, 2024. So in just about a year, you know, I would say 10 months now, 10 months away. And it's going to be 5 days. There's going to be couples coaching every day, mindfulness coaching, embodiment practices. We're going to do intimacy enhancing exercises and challenges, time to practice that in the evening times. We're going to do a few excursions like biking down Haleakala, which is this most magical mountain in the cloud. You actually have like cloud on your face as you're biking down the mountain. I've already set that up. So excited. And there'll be opportunities for surfing. I'm going to have hula dancing for all the ladies. So we dance in front of them. And this is part of embracing your femininity. And everything is optional. So you can come and you can participate in what you want to do and not. And I have several people interested who are actually going to be celebrating their like 10 year anniversary. So I'm super excited.
Wow, that sounds really fun. I don't think I've ever done hula hoop in front of my husband.
Hula dancing.
Yeah, hula dancing. Oh, yeah. Oh, interesting. Okay. It's like,
we should do hula hooping in front of our spouse.
That would just be playful, right? Yeah. What would you say regarding the takeaways, like a summary or a takeaway and an action item? Like, you know, you could give me one or two or three. It's up to you.
Yeah. So first of all, just decide how you're feeling about your love life right now. How are you feeling about it? Like, what is the mood? What is the vibe? And if it's love, infatuation, appreciation, great. Keep doing what you're doing. If it's anger, if it's resentment, it's irritation, frustration, okay. Like, this is your wake-up call. This is your invitation to investigate where these things are coming from. It's time to write your shitty story right now and not believe any of it. Giving yourself permission, making time in your calendar to work on yourself and these emotions. Look at your calendar right now. I mean, I know you're a huge calendar person. My calendar's packed every hour of the day. If I don't have my husband in my calendar at least once a week, what are you doing? You know? And so make sure that's happening, because when you don't have the time, then there's no intimacy. And don't say this, oh, it was so much easier before we had kids and when we were younger. No, it wasn't easier. We just went on date nights. We shaved our legs. We did our hair. We did our makeup. We put on our cute dress. We went out, and that was the night we were going to be playful and intimate. And we scheduled it back then, and we need to schedule it still. Okay. So make sure that you are scheduling time, that you don't have to be some independent woman. If you're a woman out there, if you're a man, or you don't like both support, maybe you need to just go home and ask your spouse, how can I support you today? How can I best support you today? But every more masculine person in the relationship wants to feel needed, respected, and opened up to. The feminine in the relationship, they want to feel heard, safe, understood. So you have to recognize this. And that's like a whole nother journey we can talk about next time, masculinity and femininity. So all that, Anne, go do it. Go do it today.
Yeah. It's all about dropping the masculine mask for me, at least. And, you know, always work in progress for me or anybody who is like a driven professional woman to be feminine. And actually, the hair, the dress, the makeup helps, but it's really how you feel too. I found that I'm trying to really embody it, the way I talk, the way I walk. I'm trying to embody it, to be playful, like you said, to have compassion and not be so rough and tough every time something comes up. Like, you know, got to be equal in response, I guess.
Yeah. And I can give you one quick tip too. Like, next time your husband says something and you just want to get so irritated and you're just like, what the heck did you say or what did you do? Instead, just start like tickling them, you know, start poking them underarms, tickle, and then see what happens, you know, that irritation into just like, and it'll be like this, and then they'll start laughing and it'll be a whole thing.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I say like, are you mirroring me? Or like, are you feeling okay today? But at the same time, when I say that, I could just tickle him, maybe. That's a good idea. Thank you. And if people want to learn more about your coaching, do they just go to the same website as well?
Yeah, just go. And I'm on Facebook and Instagram, Kate Mangona. So you can just find me, Kate Mangona, on Facebook and Instagram, Kate Mangona MD. And I respond to messages on Facebook all the time, Instagram, like occasionally.
And K-A-T-E and the Mangona, M-A-N-G-O-N-A, for those of you guys listening, right?
Like the mango, like the fruit mango with an N-A. Yep.
Oh, okay. There we go. Okay. Well, awesome. Thank you so much, Kate. I think we could probably do another episode, masculinity, femininity. So maybe like even real life scenarios. This has been tremendously helpful. And for the people who are listening, please take, you know, just take one action, whether that's, you know, doing your current story, or recognizing what you actually need right now instead of not having insight to what is actually going on, and just decide to not victimize and take ownership of your own marriage, anything, or just get a book on Audible, go subscribe to Kate's podcast, something. Okay. And all the links, everything we talk about is going to be in the show notes at productivitymd.com. And I just want to really thank you for coming on the show, Kate. I know that the audience probably got a lot out of it. So thank you.
Thank you for having me. It's such an honor.
Yeah. And just remember, everyone who's listening, that everything we need is already within us now. Thank you. Disclaimer, this content is for general information purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of this information linked to this content is at the user's own risk. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical conditions they may have and should seek assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions. The views are personal views only and do not represent any university or government institution.